provide us an opportunity to do five distinct things. One, to analyze, to look at alternative systems for the delivery or packaging of services at this hospital. And these are to be defined in terms of the community's needs and also to measure the effectiveness of these packages or systems in meeting these needs. Secondly, it will enable us to study appointment systems, triage systems, transportation, outreach, and medical record systems to support this effort. Thirdly, it will enable us to plan for space and equipment needs in order to transfer from specialty clinics to a primary care center concept. We will also be able to evaluate the fiscal feasibility and develop reasonable fee schedules. And finally, and perhaps most importantly, we'll be able to monitor what we're doing in terms of meeting the community's needs. It is very difficult at times like this to set aside the time and the manpower to plan, and as a result, fragmentation of healthcare services at Queens and elsewhere is characteristic. This unique funding, which in the case of Queens Hospital Center comes to $96,000 for the year, will enable us to plan collectively and with the community to organize and provide humane and continuous services for the patients of this community. We owe a great deal to Senator Javits in this area and in many other areas for the promotion of the health care of the community and to enable all of us to work more effectively to provide this care. I'd like to, on behalf of all of us, thank you, Senator Javits, and introduce you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Rothschild. I'd like to introduce to my constituents here in Queens a close friend and colleague in the Congress who served upon the committee from which this piece of legislation came and who was of enormous help to me, as I have been to him on other occasions, in developing and bringing it forward, Senator John Chafee, Senator from Rhode Island. Senator has very graciously accompanying me on my rounds for the part of this day in New York. The significance of the grant has now been explained to you, and I'd like to pinpoint it as representing a problem, a grave hospital problem for the people of this state and particularly of New York City, which is heavily impacted. The fact is that there is a grave shortage of medical resources, of doctors and nurses and other health personnel, as Dr. Rothschild has specified from the law, which defines this as a medically underserved area. And the problem being presented to us of emergency rooms, which themselves are overburdened, being further burdened by routine family practice patients because they've got no other place to go, produced in itself a remedy. And that is the idea of installing a primary health care in the hospital or under hospital auspices. We have provided in this measure that has been described some $30 million for the final year and $25 million for the current fiscal year. But as is true generally in government, you first have to prove something by actually trying it out. And so the best I was able to do so far, which is good in the sense that it gets us well on the way, is to provide for planning grants, of which 11 have been made, as the doctor has said, three in New York, for the purpose of experimenting with this concept. It looks very auspicious, and I'm very hopeful that this hospital will be a great element of the proof which will settle it into being a definitive program. I might say that out of the same committee, and again with Senator Chafee's help, we also developed the concept of assigning a public health doctors, which has now been done in some areas, to medically underserved areas like this one. And that, I think, too, will dovetail with what we're doing now with some effect. Also, as you all know, we have a problem with U.S. medical students studying abroad, and we've now regularized their ability to get credit for the period of time they study abroad. But we still face, again in areas very much like this one, the problem of foreign medical graduates, and we're still wrestling with just how to deal with that problem, especially as, for reasons which are indigenous to us, there seems to be no substitute for many many hospitals in crowded areas like this one. And we have about 2.5 million New Yorkers out of 50 million Americans who are located in these statutorily defined medically underserved areas. So the problem's a very big one. Lastly, and very importantly, this problem fits into our efforts to prepare for some kind of a national health plan. Now, the illusion that there is only one kind of national health plan is much too prevalent. The general idea is that it's some kind of government medicine in which a fee will be paid to the government or some government agency, and the health insurance will result. That is one type of plan. It is far from the only plan. And my plan, for example, which I've worked on for years, as I've worked hard in this field, is based upon using all the facilities, public and private, which exist today, and fixing the cost according to yardsticks established by regions of the most efficient operation, giving a benefit to those who operate more efficiently and compelling those who operate less efficiently to upgrade their standards, and also to take out millions of people who would otherwise be under the plan by allowing them either to get insurance, which could be private, making for great competition, or to have employer-employee plan, which millions of workers are now subject, so long as it meets the minimal federal standard, thereby taking millions of Americans out of the system. And one of the challenges which we're going to meet in coming years in the Congress is an effort to establish a system solely based upon the government covering, in some fashion, catastrophic care. The difficulty with that, while it is itself, of course, most laudable, as catastrophic care breaks many families, the difficulty is the narrowness of the participants, because in percentage, they are relatively few. Could be hundreds of thousands, but this is a very big country. So in percentage, they are very few. Yet the resources that they will consume are extremely great. Whereas if the participants are far more numerous, as in a general plan, then like insurance, those who are not sick help to cover the cost for those who are, without it being too much skin off anybody's back. And finally, I'm a great believer in protective health care. Undoubtedly, this will be the best way, in which to deal with controlling costs. And for catastrophic care, you give up the option of protected health care almost entirely. But we'll wrestle out those problems. And in the meantime, it's essential, one, to do the best we can in the interim, which is what this plan is all about. And secondly, and just as importantly, to establish more optimum facilities which can function as we improve the national health care system entirely. That's why we favor group practice units. That's why we favor health maintenance organizations. That's why we favor community health centers and hospital centers like this one. And that is the reason why the legislation, which has been described, should be so valued to this area and to this hospital. Lastly, I am a legislator. Senator Chafee is a legislator, though from another state. We share one thing in common, and all legislators do, whatever may be their views. The gratification at seeing something which you have helped to create work successfully in order to really help people. And I would like to express my gratitude to the hospital staff and to the management staff for undertaking this effort. And I hope very much that we'll do everything I can to help you to make it successful, because that is the way in which it can be expanded, proliferated, be the best demonstration project for other hospitals in this part of the country and in other parts of the country, and enormously expand what the American taxpayer is getting for the rather modest amount of planning money which has been given here. And knowing the personnel, both on the medical and administrative side, and the reputation of the hospital, I have every confidence that the United States will be greatly rewarded by what is done here. Thank you all very much for waiting for us, and thank you for being present on what for me is a most auspicious occasion.
This is Alan Nicholson in New York City with Senator Javits. Senator Jacob Javits dismissed today's New York Times editorial calling for him to step aside by saying the voter can vote as he chooses. He quoted New York City Mayor Ed Koch saying it is arrogant to tell someone who has Javits's assets not to run. The cut runs 31 seconds and begins on my count. 3, 2, 1.
I mean, whoever decided an election on polls, and that's what the Times wishes me to do. They want me to withdraw from the race because of the polls. And I just feel that the voter certainly has every opportunity to do as he pleases. Mayor Koch's quote is pretty appropriate. How can anybody be so arrogant as to tell the incumbent, who has had 24 years of service, that he should get out?
To talk here with friends. I'm a New Yorker born and bred. I've represented a congressional district not far to the west of this one in 1947 and until 1954, and then spent 2 years as Attorney General. And since then have spent 24 years having been elected and re-elected four times as your senator. By now I have served in the Senate office longer than any other senator in the history of this state from the founding of the Republic. And before another one comes along like me, it will take at least a quarter of a century. So these are the assets which New York has given me. It's got a huge investment in me. And I'm very senior on many committees. To specify them would be immaterial. The important point is what they do. So let me tell you what they do. I'm very senior on the committee that deals with peace and war, the Foreign Relations Committee. I'm the ranking member. That's the number two position on the committee. The other is the chairman, who's a Democrat. I'm also very senior on the committee that deals with health, education, the very young and the very old, and with labor, organized and unorganized. I'm also the very senior on the committee that deals with every government department. Now, in these jobs, with some talent, a great deal can be done, and I have done it. For example, let us take the first committee, where I'm the ranking member in respect of peace and war. There I have been a cool head with enormous experience in the foreign policy field, and I have done my utmost to keep the peace, to keep America strong, but not to let America's strength make us drunk with power, but to exercise an intelligent influence so our policy is constructed. And in that regard, for example, I have been the author of the War Powers Resolution, which for the first time in our history of over 200 years restrains the power of a president by sending our troops into a hostile area to put us in war. This is the greatest restraint that has ever been put upon presidential war, of which we've had over 100 in our history, and including the Vietnam War. As the senior member of the Committee on Labor and Public Welfare, or Labor and Human Resources, rather, I have piloted through many measures for health, including a very, I think, ingenious measure that I'm going over to Harlem Hospital to talk about, because they've just gotten a grant under it, which will enable hospitals like Harlem Hospital to establish primary care centers to prevent their emergency rooms from being overrun by normal medical patients, which is the problem in these medically underserved areas. Also, I am the author of CEDA and have piloted those bills through for years, including summer jobs for youth and all of the youth employment programs under CEDA and under the education law. And one of the big things I'm doing now is to further implement the training of youth in order to take some of the sting and difficulty out of youth unemployment, which, as you all know, I needn't tell you, is so heavily responsible also for street crime. Idle hands are going to be engaged in mischief. And the most innovative of those programs now has matured into a program which I started and the president has now taken up for the purpose of keeping youth in school and giving them an opportunity to work while they're in school. Now, that's available in college, but it's not available at the high school level. And that's what Hubert Humphrey and I started when he was alive. It's funded by about $150 million. Now is better articulated under the program going through. And also will be more heavily funded. We're talking about $900 million in that program. That's more like it. Also, I've handled practically every unemployment compensation bill on the floor, which added federal programs when unemployment was reaching out beyond the normal 26 weeks of unemployment compensation, and has been extended to as many as 65 weeks with my handling of it. And looking at the Committee on Government Operations, which is the committee that deals with every area of the Congress, that is every area of the Executive Department, it's enabled me to be an ombudsman respecting the operation of these departments so that they don't act unjustly and are not overbearing in individual cases. And so I run a huge staff for any public official of people who deal with the problems up here and in every other place in my state. And I think it's fair to say that there is no town or city or village or county in this state which has not felt this influence and this assistance. And as I think most of you know, I handled the financing problem of New York in 75 alone, because Senator Buckley, who was then my colleague, was not at all convinced that New York City should not go into bankruptcy. And in 78, I handled it with a very gifted partner, Pat Moynihan, and both successfully. And we've received a great tribute from Bill Proxmire, who opposed us as chairman of the committee that handled the matter, who wrote in his book, Greening America, the Fleecing of America, following his sardonic award of the Golden Fleece, in which he says that without us, New York would have gone down the drain, and pays us a very glowing tribute. I won't bemuse you with more. You all know that I was one of the principal fighters for civil rights and culminating in the Civil Rights Act of 64, and that I've been very vigilant in opposing judges who had segregationist views. Sometimes I've won, sometimes I've lost, but I've not hesitated to do it because I know it to be best for our country. And on one occasion, it was 2:30 a.m. Of an evening we were going to adjourn. That just happened in this session this year, in which I opposed the judge from Mississippi. It didn't make me very popular that night, but my stature in the Senate, I think, is very well established by now. And members feel that I'm extremely effective in bridging differences between them. So a momentary unhappiness with staying up late did not change my position in the Senate. I think that's about it. When I decided to run, I decided that you had given me so many assets that could be used for you in terms of seniority and clout, that I had, in a time of crisis, no right to deprive you of it without your so willing it. And so I've stood about 9 months of campaigning, which, if I hadn't had a conscience, really would not have been necessary. And here we are on the eve of election, and we're still at it. I need your support now because I lost the Republican nomination, largely because I would not compromise in the things that I believe in. And I asserted them in the teeth of a conservative swing in my party, and it cost me the nomination. But I'm not sorry, because I think the alternative is very bad for our country. And I don't represent middle income or lower income or higher income America. I represent you all. And I've acted that way. Even on occasion, feeling that you can't discriminate against the rich just because they're rich. I mean that very seriously, and certainly not against the poor, whom I've defended with every fiber of my being and sought to improve that condition and to end the syndrome of poverty. So New York has a big investment in me. It can either say it should be liquidated at this time, or it can opt to continue it. And I hope it opts to continue it. If it does, it'll be most gratifying to me. If it doesn't, I'm not going to be mad at anybody. And every New Yorker is free to vote his or her views on the election. And if I get a lot less than the polls show, then I will not be, as I say, resentful or feel that anybody's ungrateful. And if I get a lot more than the polls show, I should win the election handily. Thank you all very much. Now, you've all been starved for lack of breakfast, so I'm going to sit down and answer some questions as long as I reasonably can to keep my other engagements, and then spend a few minutes with the press, which is anxious to talk with me, and then be on my way to Harlem Hospital. Again, I thank you, and please, anybody, feel free to go up and get your breakfast, and I'll answer some questions from here.
I would suggest that we ask the question.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm from home. I'm going to apologize about that. Senator, let me ask for many that have asked me. There's been a great deal of press rumors and stories that there's some sort of deal working in the works that you may very well decide to throw in the towel.
Yes. Yes. There is no deal of any kind or character with anybody about anything. Has not even been suggested to me. So whatever happens is entirely my own thinking and my own conscience. I have no such intent. I feel that I've embarked on a course which ought to be allowed to come to fruition through a vote of the people. And I have no design to abort that course. I have not been persuaded that this is the thing to do in the interests of the people I've represented for so long. So I hope that that lays that question at rest. But I want to emphasize, because naturally there's a great deal of cynicism, especially in the press. So I wish to make it crystal clear, and I say this directly as a quotable statement. There are no deals of any kind or character relating to my future which have been suggested or discussed or raised with me directly or indirectly. And whatever decision I have just stated is my personal decision only.
Any further questions?
I have one. So in essence, I heard this morning, Senator, that you will be meeting with Elizabeth Holzman, or supposedly meeting with her to pull out. So
can I, can I lay that address too? My people brought up the Daily News article. It doesn't say that I'll be meeting with Ms. Holzman. On the contrary, it says precisely the reverse, that I will not.
On the radio, I said that you
will. Well, the radio is completely wrong, because I am not, and it has neither been suggested or approached, and I don't think it's very fair to me, nor to Ms. Holtzman, because it's, as far as I'm concerned, and it's true of her because I haven't heard a single word from her, or anybody on her staff, out of the whole cloth. And the news is right, the Daily News. I don't know whether it's right as to the story and with her, you know, between her and her people, but it's certainly right as far as I'm concerned.
Senator, could you briefly express what would be the impact of Mr. Alphonse D'Amato's presence with regards specifically to those areas that you spent a lot of time with, civil rights and so forth?
I think that's a very intelligent question. I believe that Mr. D'Amato is not fit to be my successor, because he is a man of very limited experience. And I'm leaving out all the fracas about his being, although I must say it, an element, a cooperating element of a political machine, which is just like the Tammany Hall machine, and with all of the aura that goes with that. And what worries me, or would worry anybody, is a senator, for example, recommends judges, federal judges. Now, the president may or may not appoint them. A senator recommends federal prosecutors. Again, the president may or may not appoint them, but he recommends them. And no judge or prosecutor will be confirmed by the Senate where the senator from that state objects. So he has a veto power. And there are many other things in which there is great responsibility in the Senate of the United States. And therefore, fitness must be adjudged also in those terms. And the machine politics worry me very much about Mr. D'Amato. There are many other things, including, as I say, his complete lack of experience in anything on the national level. This man's only been in even local office for 10 years. So I think that it's a very, very risky thing that the people of New York would be doing. It's a very, very risky thing. And I hope very much they don't do it. And I've done my utmost in the primary and now in the general election to persuade them that they shouldn't. Indeed, in the primary, many of my advisors think that I was too negative and that I might have wanted had I been more the way I usually campaign. Which is positive, what I have done, what I will do, what I'm able to do. But I felt so outraged by the candidacy and the nature of the campaign wage that I simply almost instinctively had to denounce it, which I did time and time again. But in my party, it didn't do any good.